Welcome to the Divine Will Podcast, where we read and study the writings of the servant of God, Louisa Picaretta. Let us begin. We continue with reading excerpts from the Book of Heaven about the Passion of our Lord. Volume 13, November 19th, 1921. Jesus, agonizing in Gethsemane, had the assistance of His Most Holy Mother and of Louisa, the two olives, and He entrusted to them mercy and justice. In order to know the truth, it is necessary to want it and to act accordingly. The truth is simple. I was keeping my Jesus company, who was agonizing in the Garden of Gethsemane. Inasmuch as it was possible, I sympathized with him and held him tightly to my heart, seeking to wipe away his bloody sweat. My amiable Jesus, with a weak and failing voice, said to me, "My daughter, my agony in the garden was hard and painful, perhaps even more painful than that of the cross. For if the cross was the fulfillment and the triumph over everything, here in the garden was the beginning. The evils are felt more at the beginning than at the end. In this agony, the most harrowing suffering was when all sins presented themselves before me, one by one. My humanity took in the entire breath. Every offense bore the imprint, death to a God, armed with a sword to kill me. Before the divinity, sin appeared to me so hideous, even more horrible than death itself. By merely understanding what sin means, I felt myself dying, and I truly died. I cried out to my Father, but he was unrelenting. There was not even one person that helped me, so as to prevent me from dying. I cried out to all creatures that they might have pity upon me, but in vain. My humanity was languishing, and I was about to receive the final blow of death. Do you know who it was that stopped the execution and sustained my humanity from death? The first was my inseparable mother. Hearing me cry out for help, she flew to my side and supported me, and I rested my right arm upon her. I looked at her almost at the point of death, and I found in her the immensity of my entire will and the lack of any breach between my will and her own. My will is life, since the will of my Father was unshakable, and since my death was caused by creatures, it was another creature, one that contained the life of my will, that gave me life. And so it was my mother, in the miracle of my will, who conceived me and gave birth to me in time. Now for a second time, she gives me life to allow me to fulfill the work of redemption. Then looking to the left, I saw the little daughter of my volition. I saw you as the first, followed by other children of my will. Since I wanted my mother with me as the first intermediary of my mercy, through whom we would have to open the doors to all creatures, I therefore wanted her on my right side to lean upon. I wanted you as the first intermediary of justice, to prevent that it be unleashed upon all creatures as they merit. Therefore, I wanted you on my left side to lean upon, so that you might support my left side together with myself. With these two supports, I felt myself given new life, as if I had suffered nothing. I walked with a steady stride to meet my enemies. And all the pains that I suffered during my passion, many of which were capable of killing me, these two supports never left me. When they saw me almost at the point of death, with my will that was within them, they sustained me and gave me many sips of life. Oh, the miracles of my volition! Who could ever count them or determine the value? That is why I so love the person that lives in my volition. I recognize in him my image, my noble features, and I hear my own breath and voice. If I didn't love such a person, I would cheat myself. I would be like a father without generation, without the noble retinue of his court, without the crown of his children. If I did not have children, a court, or a crown, how could I call myself a king? My kingdom is comprised of those who live in my will. From this kingdom I choose the mother, the queen, the children, the ministers, the army, and the people. I am all for them, and they are all for me. After I thought about what Jesus had said to me, I said to myself, how can this be put into practice? Jesus returning added, my daughter, to know these truths, it is necessary that there be the will and the desire to know them. Imagine a room in which all the shutters are closed. Regardless of the sun's intensity outside, the room always remains dark. Now the act of opening the shutters indicates the desire for light. But even that is not enough. If one does not take advantage of the light by tidying up the room, dusting it, and by getting down to work, so as not to waste the light that has been obtained and thus prove oneself ungrateful. So it is not enough merely to have the will of knowing the truths if, in the light of the truth that is illuminating him, a person does not also seek to brush away his weaknesses and to put his life in order according to the light of the truth that he knows, and together with it to set himself to the task, thus making it part of himself in such a way that the light of the truth that he has absorbed shines through his mouth, his hands, and his demeanor. Otherwise, it would be like killing the truth. Not to put it into practice would be to live in disorder before the light. A poor room full of light, but totally thrown into disorder, topsy-turvy, and in complete disarray, and a person inside of it that doesn't take care to put it in order. Wouldn't this be a pitiful sight to behold? But that is what someone is like who knows the truths and does not put them into practice. Be aware, however, that in all the truths, simplicity enters in as the first element. If the truths were not simple, they would not be light and would not be able to penetrate human minds in order to illuminate them. Where there is no light, objects cannot be discerned. Simplicity is not only light, but it is like the air that one breathes, which, even though one does not see it, provides everything with respiration. Were it not for the air, the earth and everyone in it would be without life. In like manner, if the virtues and the truths do not bear the mark of simplicity, they will be without light and without air. January 22, 1913. The triple passion of Jesus, of love, of sin, and from the Jews. Jesus is thrown into the Cedron stream. I was thinking about the passion of my always lovable Jesus, especially of what he suffered in the garden. I found myself all immersed in Jesus, and he told me, my daughter, my first passion was of love, because the first step with which man in sinning gives himself to evil is the lack of love. So since love is missing, he falls into sin. In order to be repaid through me for the lack of love of the creatures, love made me suffer more than anyone. It almost crushed me, more than if I were under a press. It gave me as many deaths for as many creatures receiving life. The second step that occurs in sin is defrauding God of his glory. So in order to be repaid for the glory taken away by the creatures, the Father made me suffer the passion of sin, such that each sin gave me a special passion. Although there was one passion, I suffered for sin as many passions as there would be sins committed until the end of the world. So the glory of the Father was restored. The third effect produced by sin is weakness in man. Therefore, I wanted to suffer the passion from the hands of the Jews, my third passion, to restore in man his lost strength. Therefore, with the passion of love, love was restored and placed at the right level. With the passion of sin, the glory of the Father was restored and placed at its level. With the passion of the Jews, the strength of the creatures was placed at its level and restored. I suffered all this in the garden, and the pain was so much, so many the deaths, the atrocious spasms inflicted upon me, that I really would have died if the will of the Father for my death had arrived. Then I began to think of when my lovable Jesus was thrown into the Cedron stream by the enemies. Blessed Jesus made himself seen in a state that aroused pity, all wet by those filthy waters. He told me, "My daughter, in creating the soul, I covered her with a mantle of light and of beauty. Sin removes this mantle of light and of beauty, placing a mantle of darkness and ugliness, rendering the soul disgusting and nauseating. And I, in order to remove this mantle, so filthy, which sin puts on the soul, allowed the Jews to throw me into this stream, where I remained as though enwrapped, inside and out, because these putrid waters entered even into my ears, into my nostrils, and into my mouth. So much so that the Jews were disgusted to touch me. Ah, how much the love of creatures cost me, to the point of rendering me nauseating even to myself." Volume 16, January 4th, 1924. The words of Jesus in the garden. "Not my will, but yours be done." Through them, he established with his celestial Father the contract for the kingdom of the divine will upon earth. I was thinking about the words of Jesus in the garden when he said, "Father, if it be possible, let this chalice pass from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." And my sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, "My daughter, do you think it was because of the chalice of my passion that I said to the Father, 'Father, if it be possible, let this chalice pass from me?'" Not at all. It was the chalice of the human will, which contained such bitterness and fullness of vices, that my human will, united to the divine, felt such repugnance, terror, and fright, as to cry out, "Father, if it be possible, let this chalice pass from me." How ugly is the human will without the divine will, which, almost as within a chalice, enclosed itself in each creature. There is no evil in the generations, of which it is not the origin, the seed, the fount. And in seeing myself covered with all these evils produced by the human will, before the sanctity of my will, I felt myself dying, and indeed, I would have died if the divinity had not sustained me. But do you know why I added, and as many as three times, "Not my will, but yours be done"? I felt upon myself all the wills of creatures united together, all of their evils, and in the name of all I cried out to the Father, "May the human will be done on earth no more, but the divine. May the human will be banished, and may yours reign." So even from that time, and I wanted to do this at the very beginning of my passion, because the calling upon earth of the Fiat Voluntas Tua, on earth as it is in heaven, was the thing that interested me the most and the most important one, I myself said in the name of all, "Non mea voluntas, sed tua fiat." From that time I constituted the era of the Fiat Voluntas Tua upon earth, and by saying it as many as three times, in the first one I impetrated it, in the second I made it descend, in the third I constituted it ruler and dominator. And in saying, "Non mea voluntas, sed tua fiat," I intended to empty the creatures of their wills and to fill them with the divine. Before dying, since I had only a few hours left, I wanted to negotiate with my celestial father my primary purpose for which I came upon earth, that the divine will might take its first place of honor in the creature. This had been the first act of man to withdraw from the supreme will, and therefore our first offense. All his other evils are in the secondary order. Therefore, first I had to accomplish the purpose of the fiat voluntas tua on earth as it is in heaven, to then form the redemption with my pains. In fact, redemption itself is in the secondary order. It is always my will that has primacy in all things. And even though it was the effects of the fruits of redemption that could be seen, it was by virtue of this contract which I made with my divine Father that his fiat was to come to reign upon earth, realizing the true purpose of the creation of man and the primary purpose for which I came upon earth, that man could receive the fruits of redemption. Otherwise, my wisdom would have lacked order. If the beginning of evil was his will, it was this will that I was to order and restore, reuniting divine will and human will. And even though the fruits of redemption could be seen first, this is nothing. My will is like a king who, though he is first among all, arrives last, being preceded for his honor and decorum by his peoples, armies, ministers, princes, and the whole royal court. So the fruits of redemption were needed first, so that the height of the majesty of my will might find the royal court, the peoples, the armies, the ministers. But do you know who was the first one to cry out together with me, "Non mea voluntas, sed tua fiat"? It was my little newborn of my will, my little daughter, who felt such repugnance and fright at her will that, trembling, she clung to me and cried out with me, "Father, if it be possible, let this chalice of my will pass from me." And crying, you added with me, "Non mea voluntas, sed tua fiat." Ah, yes, you were together with me in that first contract with my celestial Father, because at least one creature was needed in order to validate this contract. Otherwise, to whom to give it? To whom to entrust it? And in order to render the custody of the contract even more secure, I gave you all the fruits of my passion as gift, lining them up around you like a formidable army, which while forming the royal cortege of my will, wages a fierce war against your will. Therefore, courage in the state you are in. Dismiss the thought that I may leave you. It would be detrimental to my will, since I keep the contract of my will deposited in you. So remain at peace. It is my will that tests you, wanting not only to purge you, but to destroy even the shadow of your will. So in all peace, continue your flight in my volition, and be concerned with nothing. Your Jesus will make it so that everything which may happen inside and outside of you will make my will stand out even more and will expand within you the boundaries of my will in your human will. I occupied myself with nothing but the will of my Father alone, and since all things are in it, I occupied myself with everything. And if I thought one prayer, it was no other than this, that the divine will be done on earth as it is in heaven. But it was the prayer which enclosed everything. So I did not move if not around the supreme will. My words, my pains, my works, my heartbeats were filled with celestial will. So do I want you to do? You must go around in it so much as to let yourself be burnt by the eternal breath of the fire of my will, in such a way as to lose any other knowledge, and to know nothing else but my will, only and always. Volume 19, May 23, 1926. How the Divine Will is Seed of Life, and Where It Enters It Produces Life and Sanctity. How the Virgin Had Her Time, So Who Must Impetrate the Supreme Fiat Has Her Time. I was accompanying my sweet Jesus in his dolorous agony in the garden, especially when, upon his most holy humanity, there was unloaded all the weight of our sins, even to making him sweat living blood. Oh, how I would have wanted to lighten his so agonizing pains, and while I all compassionated him, he said to me, "My daughter, my will has the power of giving death and giving life, and since my humanity did not know other than that of my divine will, as the sins crowded upon me, so it made me feel a distinct death for each sin. My humanity groaned under the pain of the real death that the Supreme Will gave me, but this divine will that gave me death made rise up over that same death the new life of grace to creatures, so that, for however wretched, wicked the creature might be, if she has the fortune of letting enter into her an act of my will, and should it be even at the point of death, it being life, it sows the seed of life in the soul. And so, possessing this seed of life, there is much hope for the salvation of the soul, because the power of my will take care that this act of its life that had entered into the soul not perish and can be converted at its death, because my will has the power of giving life. It and all its acts are untouchable and not subject to any death. Now, if a single act of my will contains the seed of life, what will be the fortune of who embraces in her soul not only a single act, but continuous acts of my will? This one receives not only the seed, but the fullness of life and places its sanctity in safety. And so afterwards, my poor mind lost itself in the holy divine will, making my usual acts in it. It seemed to me that everything was mine, and as I went around for all created things to imprint everywhere my I love you, my adoration, my glory to my Creator, so I acquired new knowledge of how much God has done for the creature and how much He has loved us. The Supreme Will seemed to be delighted in making known the new surprises of its love, so that I could follow its acts in order to give me the right of possessing that which went out from its creative will, and my littleness dispersed itself in its immense goods. At that time my sweet Jesus came out from within my interior and said to me, "My daughter, when my Queen Mama came to the light of day, everyone turned their attention to her, and as if they had a single gaze, all the pupils of their eyes looked upon she who must wipe away their tears and bring them the life of the longed-for Redeemer. All creation was centralized in her, feeling themselves honored to obey her beckonings. The divinity itself was all for her and all intent upon her, to prepare her and form in her with surprising graces the space where the eternal Word should descend to take human flesh. So that, if in us there was the virtue that while we operate, we treat with, speak to, give to one, we do not omit the others. Everyone would have said to us, 'Leave all of us apart, think of this Virgin, give, centralize everything in her, so that He may come in whom has rested our hope, our life, all our good.' Now, my daughter, this can be called your time. Everyone has turned their attention to you. I hear the voice of everyone, as if it were one alone, that prays to me, presses me, that my will reacquire its divine absolute rights over you, so that, acquiring its total dominion, it can pour out in you all the fullness of the goods that it had established to give if the creature had not withdrawn from its will. And so, all of heaven, the celestial queen, the angels and saints, have turned their attention to you for the triumph of my will, because their glory in heaven will not be complete if my will does not have its full triumph upon the earth. Everything was created for the total fulfillment of the supreme will, and as long as heaven and earth do not return into this link with the eternal will, they will feel as halved in their works, in their joy and beatitude, because the divine will, not having found its complete fulfillment in creation, cannot give what it had established to give, which is the fullness of its goods, of its effects, joys, and felicity that it contains. Behold, therefore, everyone yearns for my will. It is totally for you and does not intend to spare any grace or light or anything needed to form in you the greatest of prodigies. That is its fulfillment and complete triumph. What do you believe would be a greater prodigy? That a little light be enclosed in the sun, or that the sun be enclosed in the little light? And I, certainly it would be more prodigious for the little light to enclose the sun. Indeed, it seems impossible that it could happen. And Jesus, what is impossible to the creature is possible to God. The little light is the soul, and my will is the sun. Now it must give so much to the little light so as to form in her a circle, and my will become enclosed in this circle. And since the nature of light is to expand its rays everywhere, while it remains in triumph in this circle, it will expand its divine rays to give to everyone the life of my will. This is the prodigy of prodigies that all heaven longs for. Therefore, give wide field to my will. Do not oppose it in anything, so that what was established by God in the work of creation may have its fulfillment. Volume 14, April 8, 1922. Jesus's pain at seeing mankind's deformed will, intelligence, and memory. Being in my usual state, I reflected upon the pain that my dear Jesus suffered in the Garden of Gethsemane when all our faults came before him. Then Jesus, greatly afflicted, said in my interior, "My daughter, my pain was immense and incomprehensible to the created mind. It was especially intense when I saw the deformed human intelligence. My beautiful image, which I reproduced in the created mind, was no longer beautiful, but ugly, horrible. I gave man a will, an intelligence, and a memory. My heavenly Father's glory irradiated from within this human will, to which before all else he communicated his power, holiness, and loftiness. He thereby elevated it and clothed it with his own holiness, power, and nobility. In so doing, he left all avenues open between himself and the human will, so that the human will might enrich itself evermore with the treasures of my divinity. There was no concept of yours or mine between the human will and the divine. Everything was held in common and in mutual accord. The human will was our image, similar to our essence, a reflection of ourselves, and therefore our life was destined to be its life. My Father's will created a free and independent will as man's prime act, just as my Father's prime act is his divine will. But how disfigured has this will become, having traded its freedom for slavery to the vilest passions? Ah, in this human will lies the cause of all man's miseries. It is no longer recognizable. How far it has fallen from its noble status. How it is nauseating to behold. Later, as secondary act, I, Son of God, contributed, endowing man with intellect, and communicating to this intellect my wisdom and the science of all things, so that knowing these things, it could savor them and rejoice in their goodness. But woe to me, how full of filthy vices is the intelligence of creatures! It has used this knowledge to disavow its Creator. Then in a third act, the Holy Spirit participated and gave to the creature a memory, so that as it recalled the many benefits received in intimate relationship with its Creator, it might allow continuous currents of love to flow. Love was destined to crown it, to embrace it, and penetrate its whole life. But how sad eternal love becomes! This memory remembers pleasures, riches, and even remembers to sin. Thus the sacrosanct Trinity is expelled from within the very gifts that it has given to its creature. My sorrow upon seeing the deformities of these three capacities given to man was indescribable. We had established our throne in him, and he had thrown us out. Volume 14, July 28, 1922. The soul copies Jesus not only in the deaths caused by sorrows, but also in those caused by love. I felt entirely submerged in his most holy volition when my sweet Jesus came to me and said, "My daughter, fuse your intelligence with mine so that your intelligence can flow in the intelligences of all creatures, and so that it will be linked to their every thought. Thus it will be able to replace their thoughts with a like number of thoughts in my volition, and I will receive the glory as if all the thoughts had been thought in a divine manner. Enlarge your will in mine. Nothing must escape from within the net of your will and my will. My volition in me and my volition in you must fuse and enjoy the same limitless bounds. But I need your will to allow me to enlarge it, to be expanded into my will, so that no created thing will escape it. Thus, in all things, I will hear the echo of the divine will within the human will, and thereby engender my likeness in you. My daughter, I suffered a double death for every death that creatures suffered, a death of love and another of sorrow. When I created creatures, I created in them a structure of love, so that nothing but love should have emanated from them. This is true to such an extent that my love and their love were destined to intertwine in continuous currents. Man not only failed to love me, but also, ingrate that he is, offended me. Therefore, I had to accept a death of love for each creature in order to make restitution to my Father for their lack of love, in addition to a death of sorrow to make restitution for creatures' offenses. As he said this to me, I saw my sweet Jesus all aflame with a love that consumed him and brought him to the point of death for each creature. Moreover, I saw that each thought, word, movement, act, and step were like so many flames which consumed Jesus, but at the same time they gave him life. Then Jesus added, "Wouldn't you like to have my likeness? Wouldn't you like to accept the deaths of love just as you accepted the deaths of sorrow?" I replied, "Ah, my Jesus, I don't know what has happened. I still feel great repugnance at having accepted the deaths of sorrow. How could I accept the deaths of love, which seemed to me even worse? I tremble at the mere thought. My poor nature is to be more annihilated, more destroyed. Help me, give me strength, because I feel that I cannot go on." Then Jesus, all goodness, added, "It has already been decided. My poor daughter, be courageous, do not fear, nor even become perturbed at the repugnance that you feel. Moreover, to give you confidence, I tell you that even this is part of my likeness. know that my humanity, holy and willing to suffer as it was, felt this same repugnance. But it was not my repugnance. It was the repugnance that all creatures felt in doing good and accepting the sufferings they deserved. I had to accept these sufferings that tortured me so as to instill in creatures an inclination to do good and to ease their sufferings. So great was this repugnance that in the garden I cried out to the Father, "If it is possible, let this chalice pass from me." But do you think it was I crying out? Ah, no, you are deceiving yourself if you think that. I loved suffering to the point of folly. I loved death in order to give life to my children. That was the cry of all the human family together, echoing in my humanity. I, crying out together with them, repeated 3 times, "If it is possible, let this chalice pass from me." I cried out in the name of all humanity, insofar as all humanity was a part of me. And I felt oppressed and crushed. So the repugnance that you feel is not yours. It is the echo of mine. If it had been your repugnance, I would have already withdrawn from you. Therefore, my daughter, desire to create from me another image of myself and accept. I myself wish to enlarge your will and consume it in mine in order to imprint on it these depths of love. And as he said this, with his holy hand, Jesus imprinted these depths of love on my soul. And then he disappeared. Let all be for the glory of God. This concludes our podcast for today. This podcast is coming from the Louisa Picaretta Center for the Divine Will. For more information, please call 423-566-5178. Thank you for listening. God bless.